Blog Talk Radio.
All right, all right. Another great night. I'm excited about tonight. It's late. We're doing a late one. I've never done a radio show, a blog talk show this late before. This is 11 o'clock on, what is today, Saturday? 11 o'clock on a Saturday, and we just wanted to do something a little bit special. You know, what I like to do is always be kind of creative, kind of new, kind of cutting edge, and definitely want to continue to share new people, new thoughts, new horizons, new visions. I think that's really what it's about. You know, one thing I like to do is I definitely look at the long term. You know, we plan on being around here for a long time. So what we do is make sure we're slow and steady, and have endurance. But a lot of exciting things going on. Obviously, you know, we've been doing tremendous with the documentary. If you don't know me, and I am Charles Maddox, by the way, right? You might be listening to it for the first time, but I am a filmmaker, celebrity chef, who is also a diabetes advocate, but whose mother suffers from CRPS, and we have amazing film called Trial by Fire that is picking up some unbelievable steam. We just got two more film festivals that we are now official selections of. And I got to say, you know, that in itself is a tremendous, tremendous undertaking. I mean, you know, each film festival may get anywhere from 500 to a few thousand submissions, you know, depending on which one it is. I mean, you could imagine something like South by Southwest or Cannes or Sundance or, you know, Australia or Toronto film festivals. These, they get thousands of films submitted to them. So the fact that, you know, we are able to cut through, you know, some of those films that are submitted and become selections with hopefully the fact that we can win an award or two is just tremendous, I think. You know, and at the end of the day, it's really not about winning an award for me, even though I would love to win just one, right? Just so I can say I'm an award-winning filmmaker, right? I didn't work so hard not to be able to say that. That would be a great one to throw on the resume. But really what this is about, it's really about the people. It's really about making sure that we get this on television and that millions of people around the world see this. And we are taking the course that almost 99% of documentaries take. If you're not familiar with how a film gets made, I mean, unless you are with a big studio, and even big studios have to look for distribution for a project. But most documentaries, especially independent ones, will go to film festivals because they want to drum up attention for the festival. They want to drum up attention for the film. They want to meet and greet distributors. They want to meet the right people so that they can get their film noticed and find a home for it. I would say probably 95% of documentaries never find homes. You know, they end up online somewhere or something to that nature. Fortunately, because of the work that I've done in the past and a lot of what we've done now, we have some great offers on the table from distribution companies. But what we are doing right now, and I don't want to talk too much because we've got a fantastic guest coming up. We've also got a special guest. We've got Melissa Caddy coming on very soon. And we've got, she's an author and also a doctor. And she's got a fantastic book. And she actually suffers with some pain herself too as well. And she's doing a lot for pain. So we want to hear from her. Then we've got a great guy coming on board who is works in the industry of pain too as well. His name is Robert, and we're going to hear a little bit from him and his thoughts. We're working on some other new things coming up on pain, a new film too as well that we're very excited about called The World of Pain. But so let me get back to what I was saying. So most documentaries never get seen, and so where we're at right now is really promoting, because we could only do this one time. You know, this is something that is very special, and you know, the people need the exposure. So while we have people who are very excited about seeing the film, I mean, let's just say, for instance, we throw it on YouTube, right? Even though that's a crazy idea. But if we throw it on YouTube, and if only the people of CRPS see this film, and maybe a few other people, then what good did it do for the mission? What good did it do for the information? What good did it do for the education? Who we really want to see this film is the doctors who don't know about CRPS. We want the pharmaceutical companies who can be, you know, more in tune with trying to find a cure or a better treatment. We want the average person who may have CRPS and doesn't know it. We want the legislators who are doing things for pain to know about CRPS. So while we have a community that wants to hear it, we kind of got to understand that who we really want to target is the people who are outside of the community. So it's a bigger picture, so that they hear this loud voice and they hear this cry and that they act. It's not just to see a film and for our own, let's say, personal benefit, if that's what you want to call it. We want to make sure. So what we're doing is we're wrapping all of these amazing people in the community who are helping take this film where it needs to be. I mean, when I say we have some tremendous people who are in this community, and the list can go on, who, when I say fight each day, I'm so, so proud of everyone. You know, the team goes on from Krista to Kim, who is tearing things down every day for me, to Marie, to Melissa, to, I think I said Melissa twice, huh? To Alexia, to Nancy, to Diane, to Kristen, to you name it, to Katrine, to you name it. It's so empowering that we have so many people who help in so many ways to create what we're doing here, which is a social movement, right? And if you look at, let's say, something, and I compare this to the ALS, the Ice Bucket Challenge, that's what this is. This is, we're making our own ice bucket challenge, in a sense. We don't have the ice bucket challenge, but we're doing something similar so that we push this beautiful movement so that the world can hear this and the world can see this, and that hopefully that we'll figure out something that can really help change for the better for the people. So the film is tremendous. We had a great screening. We have one coming up in for the Hollywood, Florida Film Festival, and we've got some other ones coming up. So all this time we're utilizing to not only find the best deal for the film so that everyone can see it, because God knows you don't want to take the first or second situation, because let's say one of these companies holds you up, right, and puts the film somewhere where it's being held up for months, if not longer than that. Right, so we want to make sure that we're doing everything for the benefit of the people, so that they can see it without having any cost, so that they can see it at their leisure, so that they can invite their friends, and we can continue to market this thing. We just got a beautiful write-up in Huffington Post. We just had a fantastic press release that came out the other day, and we are just very excited. Also, got to thank Marty and Laurie too as well. They are just true gems, and that's what we're building with this too as well. We are, boy, we're bringing on some unbelievable people in this community, that good people, solid people. You know, there's nothing like working with good, solid, loving, caring people who really just see a vision and want to be a part of a vision. There's no drama and gossip and rumor. We don't do all of that stuff around here. You can save that for somewhere else, because there's somewhere else where you can find that, but we don't do that around here. It's just love and uprightness. So let's get Melissa on, and then I'm going to bring on Robert too as well, because Robert's, he's got a lot to say. I love his take on things, because, you know, he's got a perspective from a company standpoint. But Melissa, Caddy,
yeah.
How's that? Is that better?
It's Katie. Katie.
All right.
That's
you,
right.
You know what? I'm the type of guy, you can call me Charlie Chuck. I don't care. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, call me whatever you want to call me. Maddox, Matlocks, it's fine with me, you know? But how are
you're
you
open.
Tonight?
That's good. I am fantastic. I'm fantastic. Thank you. It's all good.
So,
I'm very thrilled to be on here.
So tell us a little bit about you. I mean, obviously, you know, you have an amazing background. You've done some tremendous things. But give everybody your resume, so to speak.
Sure. Well, I think I have a little bit of a unique blending of things because I actually was a personal trainer before I even considered going to medical school. And so I had this perspective, a very conservative, take care of yourself kind of attitude anyway. And then I went into medical school and I was accepted into an MD school and a DO school and almost went into massage therapy school, but then decided, you know, I got into medical school. Let me go ahead and learn some of the things that DOs learned because I was curious about some of the tools they had. And went through medical school and did a year of internal medicine, a year of general surgery, 3 years of anesthesia, 1 year of a pain fellowship, and now I'm board certified in anesthesia and also in pain medicine. So throughout the process and incurring some back pain in medical school, I've kind of learned how to deal with it myself and try to be real practical of how I utilize the medical system. So right now I do anesthesia part-time because I put a lot of focus into trying to figure out what's the right way for me to give back to the community and the biggest way. And so that's why I wrote the book, Paindemic.
Now tell us a little bit about Paindemic.
Sure. Well, it really is meant to be a guide, especially for anyone that's just starting to deal with pain or has been frustrated for a long time with pain, or maybe they just are caring for somebody that they worry about. And it really gives people a perspective, not just of pain itself, but the medical system, especially in this country, and what they're going to have to contend with. And then also the more of the philosophy of the anti-pain lifestyle. And really that's just a blending of self-care and how to utilize the medical system appropriately and put those two things together so that they can actually come out with better results and not be as frustrated and maybe get further along, because we all know that there's so much we still have to learn about pain. And there's a lot of research that still needs to go on for us to really get ahead in a way where we can really decrease what I call the paindemic. And it's really just a pain epidemic word I made up that seemed to go along with the issue that just seems to go along with the country's issues.
Now, you know, I've kind of been thrust into the world of pain. And I found a home in a sense that I feel you can feel very rewarded when you're able to help people. You know, like I said, as my mother suffers with CRPS and, you know, watching her pain and then seeing some of the other people who deal with pain, it's, you know, one thing about me, I always see myself as those people that I work with. So while I may not feel it 100%, I try to imagine myself going through what they go through, because in all reality, it can happen to any of us at any time. You know, we're getting ready to work on and bring Robert on too, as well as my partner too, as well. But he also is an industry insider who deals with pain too, as well. And then also Marty and Laurie working on a new documentary called A World of Pain. And looking to explore the mental, physical, and emotional sides of pain, and trying to understand, and maybe I'll ask you that question: what is pain?
Well, there's a lot of ways you can define that, but I like to just tell people that pain is your body's way of letting you know that something's not right, and that's not a very medical definition of pain, but it's not just feeling like something hurts per se physically. There's an emotional, and if you look at the actual definition of pain, it'll talk about the actual emotional suffering that goes along with that physical pain. So trying to separate those two things is extraordinarily difficult, and I'm really impressed with all the CRPS work that you're doing with the complex regional pain syndrome, because that kind of suffering that goes on is not the same kind of suffering per se that someone just has occasional low back pain. Some of the pain that they have to endure is day in and day out, and you can't help but let that affect mentally and emotionally, and it can wreak havoc to your life and the people around you that really care about you.
Now, I know that is can someone become, I wouldn't say numb to pain, because obviously when you think of the pain that people suffer with CRPS, mm-hmm. and like I said, looking at my mother sometimes, mm-hmm. does it get to a point where it's a little bit easier for them to deal with a certain type of pain than I would deal with that type of pain? Because, I see her suffering, and I'm like, you know, I don't know can you get used to that type of pain?
You know, it's really interesting because I hear people say or read stories, whether it's a patient I've met or what I've read on some of these special communities, and it seems as though people get to a point where it's better. But sometimes I wonder if it's an interpretation of what that pain means. And there's a lot of talk and work and research being done on catastrophization, or where you make it seem as if it's something really urgent or emergent. And anytime we think about anything in life, that can make it seem more profound and worse than it really is. But that doesn't dismiss the fact that they're actually experiencing the pain. So I think that anytime we magnify the pain in our mind, that pain that you are perceiving spatially, maybe in your foot or your hand or your whole body, anytime that you're making it seem bigger than it is, it definitely can make it worse. So sometimes when you can see it for what it is and you try to move on in your life and try to do all the things to optimize your own lifestyle, sometimes I think people can make it seem as if it's not as bad as it has been. Now, of course, there's other things out there in the medical world that can help the intensity of that nervous system. Really, it's just a nervous system that's completely dysfunctional, and to be quite honest, we don't understand it, and it's the way we describe it or define it is just what I call a constellation of symptoms. We have this long list of all these symptoms that we call complex regional pain syndrome. A lot of even surgeons don't even know that it exists. So, you know, when you're not heard or you're not listened to and you don't feel like people are acknowledging that you're suffering, I think that can make pain worse too.
Yeah. Because what I was saying is like, you know, what I can endure, what I was saying is that what I can endure and what they probably can endure may mm-hmm. be two different things. Because, you know, I remember not too long ago, I love garlic, and I'll bring Robert on in a second, but I love garlic, and I ate way too much garlic, baked garlic. And
right.
I'm not even going to joke. I've never had this type of pain in my whole abdomen in my whole life. I was literally ready to go to the hospital. And I thought, the first thing that came to my mind is, I can only imagine what the people of CRPS was. And I kind of was glad that I felt that pain, because it was kind of like, okay, maybe I'm not feeling what they feel, but I can. Mm-hmm. This was enough for me to understand that they may feel 10 times the amount of this.
Right.
So, but I don't
Absolutely.
Know if eventually do I get used to this type of pain? Is it something that just is there that I just, you know, I fight and I'm able to go through it, because I don't know if I can go through it.
Right. Well, that's the hard thing about pain is that really, so you can't on the outside ever feel what someone's feeling. And that kind of pain, by the way, I felt before, and that acute kind of pain, that is not pleasurable. It is definitely a horrible feeling. But it's really hard to define whose pain is worse. And I think that some of the examples I can give of how one person with the same kind of pain could have pain, that same pain could be worse. If you just compare, if you're really happy and you just won the lottery versus maybe you've been depressed or life's been stressful and you have the same type of incident or stress, like as far as a pain incident, that pain is going to seem a lot worse when you're in a place where the stresses are hard or life's not so great versus you just won the lottery. So the nervous system is very complex. And Charles, I'll tell you that even in my own field in anesthesia, I have gained an incredible appreciation for the variability of how our nervous systems are. And I see people under general anesthesia that some people thought they're a little crazy and maybe complaining of too much pain or whatnot. But when they're under general anesthesia, their heart rate and their blood pressure is just as variable and erratic as they were behaving when they're totally conscious. So it's not that you see any of this in the books anywhere, but it really makes you step back and not blame that person for having to deal with life and feel the stresses and the pain that they're dealing with when people on the outside just think they're crazy. And I have a little bit more empathy because I realize there's some things that they just have to contend with in a way that's it's harder for them, and or the pain that they're dealing with is just much worse to them than to somebody else. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I think it is a difficult question to answer.
Definitely. I want to bring on Robert, and I want to ask you real quick. Hey, Robert, great to have you on. And
thank you very much.
Meet Melissa, and then meet Robert. So I want to ask you both one quick question, because Robert deals with pain stimulators. Melissa, ketamine. Your thoughts on ketamine, and then Robert, pain stimulators. Do they help? Give us some background tips on good ones, better ones. What to look for, and how they can help. So you first, Melissa.
Sure.
Well, as far as ketamine, there's a few drugs on the market, and of course there's methadone as well, but that's not usually something that they give as an IV infusion. A lot of times they'll use ketamine, and it's not something that I do personally, but I know of other people around me, and when I was in my fellowship, we did some of this as well. But when you're dealing with different receptors called NMDA receptors, there's this certain wind-up phenomenon that can happen with people that have complex regional pain syndrome. And there's this intensity of pain. In fact, I describe it in the Paindemic book about allodynia, which is just this incredible sensitivity. When you have something that maybe if you have a feather that you stroke on someone's arm that normally would feel pleasurable and it feels like it's on fire, there's this, it's an abnormal response for the nervous system. And when you have this wound up state, sometimes the regular drugs that are out there are dealing with different receptors, the mu receptors, they call it, MU is the name of them. But after a while, those things don't seem to make any impact. But when you deal with a different receptor and working from a different direction, you can actually, it seems like in some people, not all, some people can actually get some depression or that intensity or sensitivity of the nervous system to calm down and give your nervous system a break. So that's one of those things that is kind of one of those offerings or options for people that have CRPS. But it's just like a lot of things. Sometimes there's a little bit of a trial that has to be done to see if the patients actually be responsive to it.
Definitely. Now, Robert, would love to hear about the pain stimulators.
Sure. I mean, thank you for having me, Charles. I really appreciate having me on the show. Before I mention the pain stimulators, just to play off of the question you had earlier, I think when the stimulators come to play, what we deal with some of the patients, and you said, what your pain, the way you cope with pain might be different than the way I cope with pain or somebody that's been in pain for a long time. I think that coping mechanism for everybody's a little bit different. So if one person's pain is a 10, that same pain level to another person, to me, might be a 5 or might be a 4. So when I get the patients, when they come to us and a physician chooses to use a spinal cord stimulator as a modality to treat their pain, we kind of evaluate what that patient is experiencing and what they might see as their pain level. We don't talk much or utilize pain levels as much as just talking to them about their quality of life and their limitations and their activities. So if someone comes to me and says, I can't walk a block, or I can't sit for 5 minutes, or I can't sleep through the night, or, those are the things that are most important when we're thinking about how the stimulator is going to help affect or benefit their life. But it's a really nice modality because unlike other procedures, the patient actually gets to evaluate it through what's called a trial. So they actually get to try the therapy first before they make a commitment to get a permanent implant, which is an implantable device, much like a pacemaker. But we've seen a lot of benefits to spinal cord stimulation and a lot of improvements, long-term improvements in quality of life. So it's a very good modality.
Awesome, awesome. We've got a couple of callers. We've got a 250-877. If you have a question, would love to hear your question. 250-877, do you have a question for us tonight?
I do, yes.
Definitely.
Hello?
Do you share the question? Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay. I'm calling from Canada, and I live in northern BC, and we don't have a pain clinic, so we don't have access to stimulators. I've never had any anything to do with that. But my question is, I'm just wondering, what's the difference between I get lidocaine infusions versus ketamine? I believe it's an anesthetic, but what is the difference between the two? Because I get lidocaine infusions once every week for 18 hours, and then I take the needle out at home. But what would be the difference? Would it be better
Good
to
question.
Get ketamine? Yeah.
So I can just generally address that. As far as lidocaine affects sodium channels, which is sort of a different mechanism they're affecting as far as the sodium channels of the nerves. And
okay.
So any type of local anesthetic, you're affecting the sodium channels. And so sometimes there can be a calming. In fact, the way that I did lidocaine infusions when I was doing those more was actually to give enough where it's almost just below. Do they have you have like the tingling in your lips to get that right level of it, or do they not get to that point?
No, well, I get 1,800 milligrams over 18 hours, so I'm not sure what that is. But I feel a bit drowsy, but yet sometimes I feel incredibly, like, I can't, like, restless leg syndrome, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes
mm-hmm.
I get where I cannot sleep at all, and I have to move around, and I feel, like, throwing up, and so it varies.
Okay.
So I just, I have good and bad days with ketamine, with lidocaine.
Oh.
So I was just wondering if ketamine is, yeah, different.
Yeah. So you're probably getting about 100 milligrams an hour, sounds like. So you're just getting a little bit over a longer period of time than how I used to give it. But as far as lidocaine versus ketamine is essentially the biggest target. It affects multiple places, but the ketamine affects the NMDA receptors within the nervous system. So that
okay.
they're different mechanisms. So sometimes they'll find that lidocaine or ketamine might work better, but it's one of those things you kind of have to weigh the risks and benefits, and if it's really giving you any benefit, and give it just a little time. Otherwise, you may have to reassess.
Yeah, no, it's actually giving me, like, before I started it, I didn't really have a quality of life. I
okay.
was pretty much bedridden, and now I can, like, every week, but once I get to, say, day four, day five, I can start to feel where it's really hard to move my hands, and then it mm-hmm. spreads, like, upwards and into my other regions because I have full body. So,
okay.
But, yeah, I just wanted to, like, is ketamine a stronger one where you don't have to go maybe every week? Because going every week for the rest of your life kind of limits going on a vacation to Hawaii, for example, or something
sure.
like that.
Sure. Well, yeah. I could maybe find a way to get in touch with you, maybe give you someone that does this more frequently to give you a little bit better or lead you in the right direction. It's not something
okay.
that I do every day. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I
yeah.
just thought maybe if you had something, if you knew which is more beneficial, or what about as far as what's it like? Oh, God, what's the word? See, here goes my mental fog with RSV.
right.
But the side effects. The side effects between, like, for lidocaine.
Versus ketamine?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say
like
just as
long term.
Sure. Just what I've, you know, looking at either one, I would, my first thought is that ketamine, as far as side effects in general, usually you'll know kind of if you're having those side effects at the time you're getting them and over multiple courses. But long-term effects, there's no real studies that I know of that really describe that or compare the two. But I would definitely always reassess your situation and pay close attention and have a discussion with your physician. Because it's going
to
be a
case-by-case
situation.
Yeah, I've had to go to the hospital a few times, yeah, because my heart heart palpitates and then it gets running really fast because it tends to flow too fast or something. But anyways, thank you.
Yeah.
I'll let you get on with all the callers, but thank you so much for your information.
Sure, and just
awesome.
One note.
Awesome.
Lidocaine, you don't want to have a huge influx too fast. It's not good for the heart as far as it, you know, getting good.
That's, yes, it was getting, I was getting really scared a few times and had to go to emergency and they had to take it out right away. And I guess it was flowing 5 times as fast as it should have for some reason.
Yeah,
I
would be careful.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're
good
welcome.
Good luck to you.
Robert, can you tell us when is a good time to use or to get a pain stimulator?
That's a good question. Actually, spinal cord stimulators were in, if you look at pain treatment in tiers, 1 through 4, spinal cord stimulators were always in the 4th tier of treatment, along with pumps and along with surgery. In the last few years, it's dropped to the 2nd or 3rd tier of treatment. So if a patient comes into a physician's office with low back and leg pain due to failed back surgery syndrome or to spinal stenosis, and they've gone through medication management, injections, physical therapy, now spinal cord stimulators are thought of as a good option prior to surgery or if a patient is not a surgical candidate. We're finding that patients are benefiting and buying time, so to speak, not having to go for surgery right away or being able to avoid surgery altogether and get tremendous pain relief from a stimulator.
Awesome. All right, Melissa, can you share where we can find your book? Because time is running out, unfortunately.
Sure.
So definitely share where they can find your book.
Sure. Well, paindemicbook.com, obviously it's paindemicbook.com. There's a whole bunch of information there and places that you can order that book. Obviously, it's on Amazon and all the big online places and regular bookstores, but that's where you find it.
Awesome. Well, we want to thank everyone. Don't forget you can go to trialbyfiremovie.com. That's trialbyfiremovie.com. Robert, we want to thank you for giving us even a few minutes tonight, right?
My pleasure.
Into the world of pain. We've got a lot to explore, and we want to talk to Melissa, too, as well. I think Melissa's doing some really interesting things, and we can get out to Houston and possibly do some filming with her and kind of hear some of her story and do some work together on trying to heal and share the story of pain. How's that sound, Melissa?
That sounds amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah,
I love
it. Sounds
it.
Very exciting, Charles.
All right,
thank
everyone.
You so much.
Have a good night, and we're going to pick this back up very soon, and we'll be able to share all the upcoming that we have going on. So tune in and we'll bring you some more amazing information on health and pain. All right. Have a good night, everyone.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye-bye. Good night.